Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The issue of who owns our water continues as we visit with a longtime resident of Barrington, New Hampshire, 78-year-old Patricia Newhall, who raised the family on food they produced and grew on their own farm. But now, Mrs. Newhall finds herself entangled in this war over water, and it's getting way too personal. USA Springs just delivered letters from their attorney warning residents not to continue their battle, or civil and criminal charges may be filed. Now there's an image. Patricia Newhall serving time for standing up for the rights to her water. Who owns our water anyway? Now we continue the story about the Nottingham, New Hampshire community and its struggle to save their aquifer, their source of water. This is a community that many of its residents, probably the majority of residents, rely on wells, deep water wells, or even shallow wells for their water. And unfortunately, the potential for their wells to be impacted in many different ways, both in terms of the water table lowering and or to be contaminated, is what is driving them to unite in two groups, Save Our Groundwater and Neighborhood Guardians. And this is all directed towards a company that is drilling the wells, wants to take out over 300,000 gallons of water a day to turn into bottles and ship over to Italy, from what we understand. So now we're going to talk to a person. Her land butts the land that USA Springs owns. And so I'd like to welcome to the Wild Side News right now Patricia Newhall from Nottingham. Patricia, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you. Actually, I'm in Barrington.
Oh, okay. Barrington.
Yeah, I'm in Barrington.
Okay, fair enough. Well, okay, Barrington and Nottingham, literally two communities.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the land they bought is in both communities.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, let's talk a little bit about you. How is it that you find yourself in Barrington? What brings you to this, your plot of land there?
Well, we lived on a farm in Newburyport, and my husband was looking for a farm in New Hampshire because there was no future in Newburyport for farming, and we found a 100-acre farm in Barrington for sale for $6,900.
Oh, boy.
And this was in 1960, and so we managed to be able to buy it, and we moved here in March of 1960 with 3 feet of snow on the ground, and we did farm it for the first several years, I would say probably 10 years, and then my husband, of course, had to work off. He worked for Brackett and Shaw Machinery Company, and the girls grew up and outgrew 4-H, and so we got rid of the animals and so forth, and we had a big garden, and I made homemade bread and this sort of thing and raised our girls.
That's a great life. In terms of the farming, what was the nature of your farm?
Well, we raised our own beef and our own pork. We sold our milk and had a big garden selling vegetables from that. And I made bread, which I had a sign out, homemade bread, and sold a lot of that. And we had a horse, and the girls were in 4-H. And then they got to be into middle school and high school and didn't want to go into the barn.
Yeah, well, I've been in barns. I know what that's like. And actually, it's many, many things. It's can be a wonderful way of life, truly.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the community there, is it considered sort of a rural and farming community?
It's a rural community, yes. And there are some farms that are small family farms that are still in existence. And there's quite a lot of land people own. Like we had our 96 acres, and we wanted to preserve all of our forest land in conservation easement. And my two girls, my husband died in 99, and my girls agreed with me that we should do this. And it took 2 years, but we did put our 80-acre forest into a conservation easement, so it can never be built on.
Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it's a very diverse, wonderful natural area.
Yes, yes.
You've got a pond and
yeah, there's a 3-acre beaver pond. It has heron nests in some of the dead trees, and there's a lot of wildlife that's down there in the woods in that 80 acres, including a bear that we saw once, and I know there's fishers and all other kinds.
So you really live and feel your relationship to that land. You
absolutely
understand it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think some people who haven't had that experience don't quite know how you can really sense the land. There's some things you can't really explain scientifically, but you have a sense about it. And one of your big concerns, because now your property abuts the USA Springs property. Now, is there a contiguous, approximately 100 acres, or is that broken up that they own?
No, the 100 acres they own is contiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that 100 acres it's the two towns, but the 100 acre lot is one solid lot. And part of the land that is in that 100 acres is Barrington Wetlands that
mm-hmm.
they bought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I come in as an abutter, because my land extends to their wetlands.
Their plans are to put up 176,000 square foot plant to bottle the water. Will they be affecting the natural environment, in other words, the wetlands or the forest? Will that have to be removed to some extent to allow the plant to go in?
Well, because the plant is not built yet. What they're working on now is a driveway
right.
from Route 4. But they have changed the placement of the building on that lot to the further end up Route 4 further towards Concord, because they had it situated right behind a housing development called Lincoln Drive. And there were 15 homes. There are 15 homes in there. And their building was to be right directly in back of their property. And because of the Nottingham Planning Board and all the ramifications of adjoining the wetlands, et cetera, they did agree to move the plant to the other end of their lot. So it is further away, and they have conceded, whether they will or not, they have said that they will build a couple of ponds that will protect what wildlife is there. I know they came in 2001, and they disturbed some of the Barrington wetlands with no permit, no anything. Nobody knew they were there. And they had gone in and disturbed the wetlands on the Barrington end of their 100 acres.
Was this for a test drill site?
I'm not sure whether it was for testing or whether they wanted to have the road go through there to wherever they were going to put the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was discovered, DES fined them and told them that they had to repair those wetlands and complete the restoration, which they have never done.
Yes.
They did a little bit of work, but they have never restored the wetlands that they disturbed back in 2001 illegally, which is one reason we have fought them, because they are not a good neighbor.
Is where it gets to be a problem. If you have a neighbor who doesn't want to listen and pay attention to you, you have a bad neighbor. And there's good neighbors and there's bad neighbors.
Right.
And it gets very personal.
Right.
And I know for myself, I can say I've got some good neighbors and some bad neighbors. Good neighbors mean that when there's an issue, you talk, and people make every effort in the world to live together as good neighbors.
Yeah.
And then there are the other kind. Well, let's talk about how this is really affecting you personally and as well your family, because I know that your family has become very personally involved in this.
Well, I have, my well is 13 feet deep. It was doused by a man from Somersworth who had an apple tree branch, and he doused for water, and he found it, and he dug down with his backhoe 13 feet, and that's as far as he could go, because there were three springs that ran into that hole.
Wow.
And so that's where the well is, and it has never gone dry in the 47 years we've been here.
Hmm. Did he hit bedrock then at that point, or what?
No, this is a sand and gravel. It's the sand and gravel level of water. And this is one thing that people have such a hard time realizing, that there are two levels of water. We have the surface water, which is which is renewed by rain and snow. And then we have the deep bedrock aquifers, which are way below. And those take a lot longer to recharge. And nobody knows how much water comes in and goes out through the fractured bedrock. And this is the danger that we perceive, that when they draw water out of that deep bedrock aquifer, it will not recharge at the rate that sand and gravel aquifers recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And when the level of that aquifer goes down, it is going to draw from the sand and gravel aquifer levels plus the streams and the wetlands to refill. And that is going to lower the water table all over our area, all over the seacoast.
Well, now, it seems if a neighbor wanted to do something like that, and it does have that potential threat for sure, that's certainly been well documented, that if you take large amounts of water, and by the way, I did a little calculation, and just to give people an idea, the estimate is 310,000 gallons
mm-hmm.
of water a day.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I did a calculation, and what that would mean is it would be an entire football field of water to a foot in depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a lot. If you get a garden hose and imagine how long it would take,
absolutely.
You know, or run your tap and try to figure out how long it would take to fill up a football field to a foot of foot deep of water.
Right.
You're talking about a lot of water
mm-hmm.
every
mm-hmm.
day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's really two concerns. One is that the water table itself could become diminished, but as well there's another aspect which I'm pretty sure you're aware of, and that is that as you start to quickly draw down the aquifers, it starts to what otherwise would be the earth itself is the filter that cleans that water and makes it drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
You start literally pulling those contaminants down into that aquifer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about those concerns.
And that's what happened in 2002 when they did their 11-day pump test. That was the first requirement that they had to do, was to do an 11-day pump test to prove that they were not going to affect the wetlands and the rivers and the other sand and gravel level waters. And they did the pump test, and the testing proved that there were contaminants from an adjoining lot to their property that was contaminated with man-made contaminants, and those contaminants were drawn down into the aquifer itself, as well as I think there were two wells surrounding the area plus two of their own wells that became contaminated from the contaminants that were drawn down from that property. That is one reason that the DES denied their permit in 2003. And there were 27 scientific facts as to why they were denying this permit. And then the government in New Hampshire changed, and The incoming governor appointed a man as commissioner of DES, and pressure was put upon DES to grant a conditional permit to USA Springs if they cleaned up the contaminants. So they promptly bought the lot that was next to theirs, that was the contamination, and in 6 months reported to DES that they had completely cleared up the contaminants in the land and in the water.
But the science hadn't changed. I mean, in other words, okay, so they cleaned up the contaminants, but once they start this thing, it would start the whole process over. One has to question why the permit was okayed.
Because one of the heads of DES said at a meeting that we were at and that I was at, and I heard him say this, that pressure from on high has decreed that they grant USA Springs a conditional permit, thereby saving New Hampshire $1 million to clean up that site, because USA Springs told DES, if we don't get a permit, we will not clean up that site. And they said that in exact words. I was there and I heard it, and Tony Gunter, who was in charge of this meeting and this hearing that we were at, said that pressure from on high, meaning the Governor Benson, put pressure on DES to grant this company a conditional permit.
Well, then since that time, you've been in and out of the courts. And one of the interesting things about this case is the fact that those of you in these organizations are trying to establish your right as citizens.
Yeah.
That jurisdiction allows you to make these cases, and that itself has been an issue.
Mm-hmm. Right, because every department in Concord has denied that we have standing as a registered grassroots organization. And they say we have no standing, therefore anything we say or do or try to do has no bearing on the whole case.
And therefore it can't get into the courts. You have no power to get these things into the courts.
Well, we did go to the state superior court, and yes, we did go to the New Hampshire Supreme Court.
Right.
And they declared that the wording of the laws regarding our water were not specific enough to deny USA Springs their permit. And the Supreme Court judges said, if you don't like our decision, then get the legislators to rewrite the laws. And so that is one of the aspects that we have been working on, is to get our representatives and senators to make the laws that we have now more definitive, so that there can be no arguments as to whether the people have a right to say, no, don't take our water.
I get emotional hearing this. You've shared with me your age. Is that something that we can discuss on air?
Well, yeah, I'm 78.
Okay, 78, and
I'll be 79 in October.
Part of the real story here is the fact that here is a person who's lived tried to live a good life and
mm-hmm.
been.
I've been very active in my community. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was voted Citizen of the Year.
Wow.
1 year and Volunteer of the Year 1 year.
You don't sound like a really dangerous and intimidating person. As a matter of fact, you sound like a pretty reasonable neighbor. But it's really too bad that a person like you, who literally has their land right next to this
mm-hmm.
Site, is being told that you have no significance in terms of raising issues. I don't understand that. This is supposed to be a democracy.
Right.
And I just don't understand why citizens suddenly find themselves totally disenfranchised in raising questions that they have the right to ask. And there are systems, legal systems set up to protections that are supposed to be in place, and they're just being sidestepped.
Right. We have, we did have a hearing, or a pre-hearing, with the Department of Transportation about the safety on Route 4 with these 60 trucks going in and out every day for 6 days a week. Mm. And they said the attorney from the Department of Justice was there at this pre-hearing, and he said, we have no right to bring any of this to the attention of the Department of Justice, because we have no standing, and therefore we have no rights. And we were supposed to have a hearing with the DOT, and she sent back a letter that said that we had no standing. I understand now that we have been granted a hearing with the Department of Transportation, I think this month, but every department has maintained that we have no standing, and this is one of the things that we, in fact, we asked Governor Lynch to start an ethics investigation, because the people of our state pay our state departments their salaries, and they're supposed to be there for the people, and we have been stonewalled from the beginning by the departments in Concord as to our needs and our desires and our concerns, and mostly our concerns.
What are they suggesting that you're supposed to do when these kinds of threats are occurring? What are they suggesting is your remedy?
They haven't suggested a remedy.
I don't understand that, and it's absolutely totally wrong.
They just figure, well, We're of no account, and they've got the permit, they've got their driveway permit, they've got their everything, and they're going to go ahead and build it.
Right. You've lived there for 47 years. You have accolades about your citizenship, and you're insignificant. That's absolutely wrong. This is progressing. You're trying to follow certain legal courses, for example, trying to get the driveway stopped, because if you get the driveway stopped based on the traffic and other dangers. But this has gotten very personal and has affected your family directly. To whatever degree you wish to share that, I think it would be interesting, because there is, I'm not going to say it's intimidation, but I will say that the effect is intimidation.
Yeah, well, and the letter that was delivered to our board members was deliberately intimidation. The possibility of their creating a slap suit against us is real.
Right, and it's criminal. It's both civil and criminal. But you also had a personal incident. To whatever degree you wish to share that, do you want to talk about that?
One instance that I encountered. A friend and I, we were driving down Route 4, and we had to wait for traffic so we could turn around and come back. And we stopped in the driveway of this contaminated site that they had bought. When traffic went by, we continued on up into Northwood so we could turn around and come back. And this truck pulled out of that driveway and followed us up to where we turned around. He turned around in the same place, followed us all the way back down Route 4 to Freeman Hall Road, which is in Nottingham, and it's almost directly across from their lot. And he followed us. We turned into Freeman Hall Road, and he followed us through there. And so we were scared. We knew that it was the security guard for USA Springs, and we had no idea why he was following us or what he was going to do. And we continued on to the Nottingham police station and got out, and he turned around and left. And we got out, and we went in to talk to the Nottingham police, and he came out, and he said, "Oh, yes, I know who that is. He's the security guard that was hired by USA Springs, and he does get over ambitious sometimes."
Well, that's not fair.
No, it isn't.
I mean, we're talking about citizens here who are just trying to live their lives. You have everything right in your life, as far as I know. I don't know all your details, but
right.
I have to assume you're a pretty straight arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also a woman who's an elder, and to have people, brutes of sorts, intimidating people with trucks,
mm-hmm.
I find that incomprehensible.
Well, I mentioned before Lincoln Drive, which is, there's 15 houses in there. And 10 of those people who own 10 of those houses have sold their houses and moved because of this USA Springs company. Some of the women who lived in there always loved to walk in the woods right behind their house with their children. And there was one woman who was in there walking, and this guy with a gun on his hip approached to her and said, "What are you doing here? You've got no right on this property." And scared her. And there were other cases of intimidation. Now, whether he went beyond his scope, we don't know. But he was intimidating the people who lived there on Lincoln Drive.
The problem is the fact that these, in so many cases like that, for some reason, they get a pass. No one ever really gets on their case and says, "You've really gone over the line here." It seems as if, because it's sort of a corporation and we can't put,
mm-hmm.
they're almost nameless individuals.
Right.
And he's a security guard as opposed to he's Steve Anderson, who lives down the road here on Route 43 or something like
mm-hmm.
that. They get a pass. If you did that, if
mm-hmm.
you or your son or something like that was walking through the woods and came up and threatened someone with a rifle, they
mm-hmm.
would very likely, the local police would very likely respond to that.
Right.
And say, "What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think you're going a little too far?" But I don't understand why corporations get the pass that they do. Let's find out now what your thoughts are at this point. Where do you think this is going to go?
We were so encouraged when Dennis Kucinich came, and we had 100 people at that meeting to talk to him and tell him of our concerns and our worries. And it was really like a bright ray of sunshine. And when I talked to him on the phone, I said, you know, it's wonderful to have somebody on our side. So, and of course, my daughter lives here with me, and my granddaughter and her husband are building a new home up just up into the woods beyond my driveway. So I gave them 4 acres of land. And so they're concerned because if this goes into effect, and as I'm sure Bill McCann mentioned, that if this goes into effect and they draw the water level down, property is not going to be worth anything. They told us once at a hearing in Nottingham that if our wells went dry, they would bring a tank of water to sit in our yard.
Oh, how pathetic.
For us to use. If we proved that it was their pumping that was decimating the water.
That's barbaric.
It is.
I mean, because there's a whole community that has lived in balance with its environment by sharing in a reasonable way, and now they want you to change your lifestyle, that you become dependent on them, that they will bring you water? I'm sorry, I'm upset. I really am. I think that's absurd.
Well, you know, three of us, I think it was Bill McCann and Marika Wild and I, went to the radio station in Portsmouth. He talks noon times every day on the radio, and we had an hour there to explain our predicament and our case and our cause and why we were so adamant about trying to get this whole project stopped. And it was really, really great because, unfortunately, a lot of people do not get the paper. Now, Foster's Daily Democrat is a paper that covers generally the whole county, and a lot of people do not get it except for the Sunday issue. And when I write my letters to the newspapers, I send them to all the newspapers I have emails for, and that includes Manchester and Concord and Portsmouth and Rochester and Dover. And trying to get the people aware of what will happen if this project goes through. And I know we did, SOG collected over 2,000 names on petitions, which we presented personally to DES, and this was probably around 2003, maybe 2004, of people who were opposed to this project. And then somebody will come across, or somebody from USA Springs will say, how can a few people hope to stop our project? And I don't consider that over 2,000 people in New Hampshire are opposed to this project. How they can figure that's a few people.
Well, it's all, they're playing the game as they've done this for years. I'm not saying USA Springs, I'm not going to say that, but I really refer to this as part of the extractive industries, which is a huge international conglomerate of interests that basically, you know, keep on just trespassing. It's a form of psychological, emotional, and spiritual trespassing that, you know, I think there's an interesting irony. But to me, it's a wake-up call and a warning.
Yeah.
That because what you're talking about is something that communities across America and literally around the world are facing, and that is the taking of their water.
Absolutely.
And so I think the concept of USA Springs is really the warning. In a larger scope, not just the corporation, but it is USA Springs that are a threat here.
Mm-hmm.
And if people lose their water,
That's right.
I recall reading a survival guide as a boy. There were a series of things that were most important to survival. The first was air. If your air is 1,000 degrees and you breathe it in, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't have air for 3 minutes, you're pretty much in crisis, okay?
Right.
But the second was water.
Yes, absolutely.
And in terms of survival, it said, and food you can go with 30 days without, really, you can actually survive for 30 days without food, but you can survive for 3 days without water, and then your whole body goes into crisis. Water is, we are water.
We are water, that's it.
Yeah.
And people, so many people have no idea where their water comes from. Now, the rivers that are concerned in this particular area flow down into the Bellamy Reservoir in Dover, which supplies water to Dover and Portsmouth from this Bellamy Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman who runs that news program at noontime that we went to had no idea where his water came from.
Right.
And most people don't. They turn the faucet on and there's the water. And they don't think a thing about it. And they don't know where it comes from. And when it's gone, then it's too late.
That is the issue that is confronting the world now as we talk about, as we hear stories about the future water wars.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear about the fact that certain communities in different parts of the world, based on global warming and other things, could face literal mass migrations because there just won't be water. Here you are. This is the 2007, and you're beginning to face this issue. And it's a very, very, very important issue. And I encourage anybody out there who may have an interest in helping your community survive this, and you personally, and as well as Save Our Groundwater and Neighborhood Guardians, to contact them and offer whatever assistance you can. For people who want to learn more or to help you out, what should they do?
Well, we have a website, and it is www.saveourgroundwater.org. And they can go to that website and find out our history and what we're doing and what we're trying to do.
Very good. Thank you so much. Now, on a very personal note, you mentioned that when you moved to your farm in March of 1960,
yeah,
there were 3 feet of snow on the ground. Now, that's a pretty serious snowfall. What's the trend been since then? Have you noticed, in terms of snowfall in winter, is it maintaining pretty much the same, or are you noticing a change?
This winter has been grotesque. We have had hardly any snow through November, December. We had snow in January, and then none, and then we have had more snow in April than we had all of November and December, and now we've had, I'm sure it's been on the news about the Northeaster. Where I am situated, I am lucky because I don't get flooded out, but a lot of New Hampshire has been flooded. People who rebuilt their homes last May, a year ago, have to start all over again this time. It seems to me that the whole time period is out of whack.
Well, some people like refer to it as global warming. I definitely think people need to think of it as global weirding. It isn't warming or cooling, it's weirding.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that our weather situations will get stranger as time progresses.
I think so, and I do believe in the global warming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the pollution that the population of this planet is spewing into the air, it cannot help but to have an effect.
Patricia Newhall, you're a great voice for people. My heart goes out to you. I want to thank you so much for sharing your spirit here on the Wild Side News.
Yeah, that's what they call me. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Stand up for the earth, whether it be at a local produce stand or in your own front yard. It's not just the weather that's changing. Our whole world is changing. As a new order is forged, we can make a difference. Stand up for the earth. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Thursday, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth stands up for this earth, here on the Wild Side News.